to start out with, Cindy, do you, before we do the minutes, do you want to introduce the guests right here?
Sure, we have two students, and if they would kind of introduce themselves, I'd appreciate that.
My name is Karen, I'm from Herzing University, and this is my second to last semester for a BSN nursing program. And I want to thank everybody for having me here, it's very educational.
My name is Veronica Watkins, I'm a, it's my second semester, I'm going to University of Illinois Chicago for a master's in public health informatics. Part of my department is to come to a board health meeting, so I thought I'd sneak in.
Welcome.
So first hand agenda is we have two sets of minutes to approve. So let's do the one from November 11th. Any comments? If so, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
So minutes on the 11th are approved. The second meeting was the last meeting on January 13th. The reorganizational meeting, any comments or discussion? If not, a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Public comments? Chairman's comments? I just found out this morning that I'm going to do this, so I have some notes here. Presentations. The life course?
So the handouts were on the table. My name is Pamela Smith. I am the project coordinator for the Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families, affectionately known as LIFE. And Karen will pull the PowerPoint up in just a minute. Let me just say by way of background that we are in our fourth year of the LIFE project. It was funded initially for 2 years as a planning grant, and then we are in the second of the last renewed funding for 2 years for implementation. And we have recently applied for a five-year continuation grant. The Wisconsin Partnership Program has made a commitment now, instead of the 2 year cycles, to a 5 year cycle, and that would be consistent with the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program with the Marquette School of Medicine, which is the other funding agency for the Blue Cross Blue Shields monies. It's at the bottom, it should only be 12 BOA 2014. Thank you. So you have the handouts, hopefully I did put some there. And I just went over, go to the second slide. And there's the information I was just covering. And our key partners, of course, is the Division of Health. We started out with the Black Health Coalition being the convening agency for the planning grant. And then they changed the requirements and asked for a fiscal sponsor, and then it was transferred over to Division of Health, and that's where we found our home and planted our roots. So our primary partners is the Division of Health, the Community Health Center, and the Community Action Agency of Racine County. Also have a lot of support from the United Way, and hoping to bring in the Mahone Foundation for some stronger partnership as well. So you might remember this picture, for those of you who were around. My last visit here, presentation before you, was in February of last year, 2013, and just asking why the gap. I always enjoy looking at the physical looks, because they usually match ours. We are also still quite quizzical about all of the different factors that impact infant mortality and the social determinants of health. But we started out by conducting a needs assessment. During the planning process, we identified the gaps and looked at the existing programs, needed programs, And then there was a rating scale that we were required to use, and the findings for us locally here were that there was a need for additional prenatal, fatherhood, and anti-racism services, looking at how the social determinants of health and racism impacts health among infants as well as families. So then we identified the community needs from that, that we would come up with additional strategies for prenatal care, additional strategies for parenting and parenting education, barriers to explore additional interventions for father involvement, and then the last one to examine and address racism and its impact on health across the lifespan. So we are trying to keep that in context and not adjust the whole gamut of concerns that might go there. So our accomplishments after we wrote the community action plan and completed the planning phase was to write and get funded for 4 different awards here in Kenosha. We were the 2nd highest funded counties of the 4 that had the LIFE project. So we have a $150,000 program over at Community Health Center, Kenosha Community Health Center, for group prenatal care called Centering Prenatal Program. There's 2 $50,000 grants. The grants could either be $50,000, $150,000, or $400,000. And the $50,000 grants are developmental grants, which have the opportunity to be expanded and go up the ladder to the $150,000 and $400,000 phase as well. Dismantling Racism Initiative, which the health department has, and Gwen can tell you more about that if you have some questions as well. Racing Kenosha Community Action Agency received $50,000 for a father involvement grant to look at models that have been implemented across the country to improve the involvement of fathers with pregnancy, the birth process, and with families. And then lastly, the Healthy Families Kenosha grant of $400,000 was awarded to the Kenosha County Division of Children and Family Services. And that is a home visitation and parenting education program. So just by way of summary here, we are still operating within this framework of the life course approach to looking at health and the determinants of health, that is looking at the biological and behavioral and environmental conditions over the lifespan that impact health. We are following Dr. Michael Liu's 12-point plan, which this life course grant program was built around from the state. And so we have three domains that we're addressing, and they're listed there for you. Improving health care, strengthening families and communities, and addressing social and economic inequities. So you'll see some continuity between the grants that were funded and some of our guiding principles here. And then lastly, the social determinants of health, looking at the other impacts of poverty, education, housing, and all the other risk factors that come into play for health. And the last two slides simply gives you an illustration of our governance structure. We are collaborative. We have maybe 25 people attending our meetings regularly, and maybe 18 or so agencies and organizations here in Kenosha that are part of the collaborative. And so we have some core advisors from those 5 key organizations, key partners that make up our advisory team. The leadership team is made up of the co-chairs from each of those domains. And then we, of course, have fiscal sponsors and hope someday to have additional funding partners at the table as well. And so we break off into those work groups to do the work of the collaborative. Our priorities for the 5-year grant that was funded, that we have been told was funded, we officially received that notice, but the expectation is certainly that this project will continue. And so we'll continue with our collaborative framework to guide the implementation of the community action plan. We're required to do an environmental scan, develop an action agenda, and then conduct some community conversations to see how things have changed over the 4 years and if we need to change or modify our directions at all. Take a look at the capacity while the infusion of new monies, in my mind, is always a good thing, it also causes some tensions and challenges with integrating and finding ways to collaborate when we're serving like populations. So we're looking to do some work in program coordination and integrating referral strategies, and then to build upon existing and new life grants. There'll be another RFP issued for additional monies that could come into the community from the life project. And then we are required to have a sustainability plan, which I believe the language says that we are to show increasing amounts over the 5 years, increasing amounts of support each year. So that's our challenge that that we're looking forward to over our next five-year plan and the update for you on the LIFE project.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any questions?
Are there any numbers of participants in some of the programs, such as the Father Involvement Initiative or the Toronto program? How many people are involved currently? Or
yeah, those are developmental grants, so they are not programs yet. They are in the process of looking at different models of programs to then apply for. So it's not direct services yet. It's not at the point of developing or providing direct services. I believe they have had some success. One of the main access points to that is through the WIC program. And last meeting, I think the director reported that 250 dads had attended with the moms for WIC, and that's one of the pools that they'll be using to connect and engage the fathers.
Thank you.
Part of your sustainability plan, is that to replace the funding that they want you to get other funding, or just to show that you have community support and that you're trying to pull in other money?
Yeah, I can't answer that question. I really don't know. I just know that in the language, there is some expectation, and I think, you know, with all grants, that they want to see some commitment of both resources. It could be cost sharing, it could be external support with additional grants, but just some commitment on the part of the communities towards these grants. Yeah. I'd like to think that spigot would never run dry, but somehow I know better.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you.
Thank you.
So next, the home visitation program.
Yep, that's me. Hi, my name is Betsy Smith, and I'm sorry I didn't get my PowerPoints handed out ahead of time, so I'll just pass those out now. Thank you for inviting me to speak. I was last year in April, and I just want to give you a quick update on the changes that we've been having this year. Our team has grown. We started out with two of us doing prenatal care coordination. We added five when we included the nurse family partnership. We've expanded on that during this past year, and I'll talk about that as we go on. We have two programs that do prenatal care. Prenatal care coordination is where we work with our multi-parent moms, and the nurse family partnership, we work with our first-time moms. Just to give you a refresher on this, so the goal of the Kenosha County Comprehensive Home Visitation Team, which is a mouthful, but it's great because we have a comprehensive program that we're trying to provide services for both groups of women. We want the mothers to have healthy birth outcomes, and then the two programs, prenatal care coordination, works with multi-parent women, and then the NFP, as I said, works with first-time moms. The difference in them in the traditional PNCC program, we can only work with the women until their babies are 60 days postpartum. They must be on Badger Care Plus, it's a benefit of their health insurance. And they have to be identified as having risks according to a prenatal assessment that we do. Risks can include race, education levels, being on WIC, if not speaking English, any number of a variety of factors. The dilemma with the traditional PCC program, which our division has been doing for years and years and years, is that at 60 days, not all women have their problems solved. So Gwen went out and hunted down the Nurse Family Partnership, seriously, literally, on foot, while she was in Denver one day. And this program, as I said, is for first-time moms. Your low income, as identified by WIC, you must be less than 28 weeks and 5 days pregnant or something. We just said 29 weeks. Like the PNCC, it is voluntary. It's nice because it takes away that requirement that you have to be on Medicaid. So it opens up the door to a broader group of people. The reason that this evidence-based program works with first-time moms is that the studies showed that they had the greatest improvement. A lot of times, if you've already done something, you think you know all the answers, which makes our traditional PNCC program a harder nut to crack. These women are eager, they're receptive to new information, they've not tried any of this before, so they're willing to be guided. And the great part about this program is that we work with the women until their babies turn two. So we have more of a platform, a foundation to scaffold them in terms of their parenting, how they can help prepare their babies to be learners in our society. The expansion that we did this year is that we integrated into Kenosha Unified School District. We have two school nurses who work part-time in the school and part-time with NFP. One of them teaches in the parenting classroom, which is now at Indian Trails. Both of them are looking at that, I'm sorry to say, 14 to 19-year-old population. They currently have 10 active moms. It's turned out to be a win-win situation because of their involvement with the program. Girls are signing up to come to the parenting program, which when it made its move from Ruther to ITA was kind of a bumpy road because the population that traditionally has used the PACE program is more centered around women. So making that trek out to ITA has been, we've put a barrier in their way. So this has been kind of helping to support them. Just like we do with all of our women in our programs, it still is a home visitation program, but some of these nurses will meet with the girls at school during their study hall in between classes before school. It just is another avenue where we get to meet them. The other great, we are working hand in glove here with Pam in the LIFE program. We have a mental health coordinator that is working both with the Undoing Racism, and then in our program, she's becoming a liaison with the mental health centers that we have in town, developing those relationships. One of our big dilemmas, so we do a screening tool, you score high in your depression screening, what then? We tell you how to manage your stress, how to sleep, and eat right, but that's not always enough. So she's been a great asset in helping these women to follow through on here to the mental health facility that we have in town. It's not obviously totally figured out yet, but at least it's getting some open doors. Currently, she's working with 13 clients. That's okay. Just to give you some numbers, because everybody likes numbers, we made 1,690 home visits during 2013. We have extended our hours till 6 p.m. at night. Sometimes some of the staff goes beyond that. Just to give you some peace of mind, we do have some kind of a safety check in place. They have to text me at the end of their days. We know who to call if they don't make it home. Our staff safety is of very much importance to us. Currently, we have 124 clients. We have 68 babies in the NFP program. Our first babies turn one in December, and it's really fun. So that's the part that we never got to have in the traditional PNCC program. Other services, we distributed 106 cribs in 2015. 24 women were enrolled in a smoking cessation program. We do assist with other programs, and we follow up on referrals from the hospitals. This is probably a growing edge for us. Once women have had their babies, we just want to connect them with resources, but sometimes I feel a little bit helpless because they need so much more than that. So obviously there are a lot of niches that we can fill, but we're doing our best at the front end. So some other things that we started in 2013, we're trying to coordinate with the other home visiting programs in town. So one woman isn't getting three visitors. We're trying to get them into Healthy Families Kenosha, one of the offshoots of the LIFE grant, CAFASI, PSN, We're meeting monthly just to say, hey, do you know about this gal? She hasn't been responding to me. And it's just nice to know that people land someplace and that they're not getting duplicate services. We did initiate at the end of last year the Purple Period Prime, which is a program that just talks about that, you know, babies are growing and developing right out of the womb. They don't know what they want. And sometimes it's just being held. So we're trying to spread that information. Again, that's kind of, you know, the anti-shaken baby thing. You don't want to have a baby shaken. And babies don't come with roadmaps as much as we would like them to. Sorry. It's one part we haven't figured out yet. And I think we might be at the end there. Karen, where am I? Yeah. Questions? I covered a lot of information, but I know that you're familiar with our programs. We're very excited with the work that we do. I guess one thing I didn't mention, it was counterintuitive when we started. The nurse family partnership is actually very specific, how often they want you to visit. It's more frequent visitation. We thought that that might be a hindrance to some people. They actually love it. They're texting us. They're rearranging their appointments when they can't make it. They're not just being no-shows. And so we're trying to incorporate some of those concepts into our PNCC program. It's, you know, obviously we're not 100% successful. I wish I could say we are, but we're not. We're probably at 75% of the women that we enrolled in this year still with our NCC program. And that's a much higher rate than we have in the traditional PNCC.
One of the goals I know of in other programs like this is to prevent the early re-pregnancy.
Yes. Okay. We're not entirely successful with that either. We have three moms out of our 68 who are re-pregnant. Re-pregnant. I don't know if that's a term. Pregnant again shortly, quicker. We're addressing that actually right now. We have a nurse practitioner and another nurse practitioner on staff. Annie Lakatos, if you haven't had a chance to meet her, she's fabulous. But she just gave us in service this morning about doing depo at home. We're thinking if women are not breastfeeding, they're not quite sure what they want yet, we're just making sure that all the home visitors are comfortable with, you know, doing the risk assessment and offering that as a kind of like a bridge to they get a program, a birth control method that is going to work for them. Again, there's some glitches in the road there, but it's just becoming more part of our conversation.
And we're also going to look at birth spacing and the interval between pregnancies as a broader or programmatic issue and compare it to what's going on in the community. So we do have a lot of thoughts, and I've been kind of up at night trying to figure that whole thing out. So thank you for that. I might come to you and ask you for some help in working that out.
The other thing I wanted to mention is this is a problem I wasn't anticipating, because one of the things to help them to develop goals, to get back into a working world, to have educational pursuits, and now we're finding that indeed they're doing that, and they don't have time to meet with us during our regular work hours, so that's what we're, you know, it's a nice problem to have.
And they're also, because of what they're doing, they're not eligible, most of them, for traditional PNCC because their incomes become too high because they're really gainfully employed because they focused on their career. So all of those really good problems that we're starting to see, it was a good problem.
And as far as the re-pregnancy, what are your barriers as far as like providing depo at home, and why do you say they're not meeting for breastfeeding moms, and you know, what would be?
Well, I don't know how evidence-based it is, but anecdotically, some women will say, oh, I was breastfeeding, I got my depo shot, and they dried up my milk. So they are recommending that you be established with breastfeeding 6 weeks before you get a depo shot. And part of it was lack of education on our home visitors' part, just, you know, increasing their comfort level to offering it right away, having it be part of the conversation. It's kind of like layers. I don't want to say it's like an onion, because an onion is like a pleasant thing. Maybe more like a chrysanthemum or a rose. We keep adding layers of information, and we discover, oh, well, we hadn't thought about this. I mean, one of the things we've become experts in, like, should you breastfeed if you're smoking marijuana? I mean, there's all sorts of interesting questions that we have to kind of parse out and see what is our answer to this question. So that's one of the barriers was, you know, increasing the home visitor's comfort level. Some of it is having if you're in the nurse family partnership, we have a fund for each woman, and so if they don't have the monies to pay for it, we can help them with that. But if you're undocumented, you're not in the nurse family partnership, you don't have any kind of resources, so $40 for a double shot might be a lot. So it'd be nice to get maybe a fund for those women to get started while they're perhaps saving up the $400 that they really want for their Mirena. So cost is a very definite thing. And sometimes it's just indecision, so we want to bridge that gap of indecision when we're trying to get more information. So.
I just have a comment. I want to thank Dr. Kadamia for mentioning about the purple period of crying.
Oh, right.
We included that into our curriculum, and it's been very useful, so it really kind of guided
good.
Us and moving in that direction. And then secondly, that we found that the 10-hour workday, or extending our workday until 6 p.m. at night, which we really point as a client-centered approach, has been very successful because of about 25% of our moms want to be are seen 5 o'clock or late, 5 o'clock and later. So that's a huge portion of our population.
Any other questions or comments for Betsy?
Thank you
very much. So next on our agenda, Transform Wisconsin, Pat Joyce.
I'm Pat Shoemaker and
Joyce Erickson.
There you go. Joyce Stanley.
So just a review of the Transform grant, because I know we came and talked to you right after we received it. Healthy People Kenosha County applied for the Transform Wisconsin funding from Madison, and we received a grant that covers three separate areas, and they are active communities, healthy food systems, and tobacco-free living. The overarching goal of the grant is to make healthy choices the easy choices. For year two in our grant, we're continuing with what we started in year one, but they've kind of tweaked it in some areas. Active schools, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about, and healthy food systems is continuing to work on farm to school. And tobacco-free living is still looking at smoke-free multi-unit housing, but this year they're going to add other tobacco products to the things that they're doing as well. So in active communities, last year our focus was on getting recreational use agreements, and our primary focus was getting a recreational use agreement between Frank Elementary School, which is a KUSD school, and the YMCA. And what that agreement would do is solidify a relationship that was already in existence, because the Frank Neighborhood Project with the YMCA does use Frank School for activity outside of the normal day. They have activities in the evenings and every other weekend, I believe. So we're going to get that agreement penned. It hasn't been penned yet. There were some delays in terms of the wording that the state wanted to see in the recreational use agreement, but I think we're pretty close to having that agreement solidified. In year two, what they want us to look at is increasing activity for children inside the school. And they wanted us to have three schools to work with. Currently, we're working with Frank and Jefferson Elementary Schools. And we're working with teachers there to do active recess and active classrooms, and maybe some before or after school activities, depending on the teachers and how involved they want to get. But we're definitely looking at active recess and active classrooms. In food systems, we installed a lot of new gardens last year, so we're up to 15 gardens at KUSD. Harborside Academy is still working their 5-acre garden out at X10 Industries in the industrial park. When we initially received the grant and applied for it, we just applied to expand the gardens. But the Transform folks really want us to implement Farm to School. And Farm to School has three components. It does include school gardens, it includes nutrition education, which we do in our schools where we have gardens. But then the part we've been struggling with, quite honestly, has been procurement. They would like KUSD to procure at least some foods locally. And that part of the puzzle is proving to be challenging. So we're going to continue to work with them in the coming year and see if we can come up with some creative ways to achieve that goal. And then our third facet, this tobacco-free portion of the grant, Joyce and her team have been working very hard on the smoke-free multi-unit housing. And this year we are going to start doing presentations on other tobacco products. Do you
want to
go ahead and
sure.
elaborate?
Real quickly. I brought booklets here for all the board members, if you want to pass them around, just to kind of show you what we're doing. I put in it a flyer on the Clear Gains, that's what we call our multi-unit housing. It's completely voluntary, 4 units or more. And I put in our Healthy People pamphlet that we had. And then on the other side, that's part of our KRW Tri-County Tobacco Free Coalition, I put where you can go to if you'd like to pull up the Surgeon General's report. And I also gave you copies of what we're going to be using to develop our tobacco free programs. Using excerpts from the Surgeon General. The ones that you'll see in your booklet are the ones that we're going to be giving to our policymakers when we meet with them. And then I also put, last but not least, our objectives and our own Cindy Johnson was on that committee through 2020. And it's the tobacco objectives we're going to be having now for the next till 2020. Our objectives for the coalition are very prescriptive. They will come off of this. So if you look at it, you'll see what we're doing. And I brought this along to show you. This is what OTPs are. And I also brought this is what we give when we go out for the multi-unit housing. We give this to the landlords. I couldn't give you all one because they're too costly. But it's everything to show them how to do it and how we can help them. And then I have these, and I would encourage you to take as many as you want. We're very proud of them. They're posters we made, and we're putting these around Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth County. And I've actually had a number of calls where people have asked us to come and do a presentation. And the presentation is on other tobacco products. These are our plates. I brought you one of them. And what we show people is how the tobacco companies are using the same colors, flavors, shapes, styles of tobacco as candy. And when you look at this, and I can pass it around just to see how attractive it is, and it's working because for the first time our kids are using other tobacco products first before cigarettes. This is the first time this has happened. The other thing we're going to be doing is we're going in with the backpack. This is my 11-year-old granddaughter's. I took it from her as she went to toss it out to show parents that they might not know what's in their child's bag, and I'd like to pass this around. There's just the kind of junk you might find. But there's also things that you, like I'm bringing out a handful of stuff here. Some of this is tobacco. Some of this is the kind of junk kids will have. For instance, right here, you know, this is a magic marker. This is a cigar. Mom wouldn't recognize it, you know, or dad. If you see it fall out. Worse than that, this is the one that got my beloved son-in-law the other day. This is a hookah pen. If you saw your child with this and using it in the classroom, the teacher wouldn't know, nobody would know. This is full of nicotine. It is illegal to sell, but our Wisconsin Wins program that is part of the tobacco, right now we are not allowed to go in and have our kids try to buy these. And it's really a political decision that they're trying to make, hoping the FDA makes a strong statement. So Wisconsin has... Pardon me?
Yes,
absolutely. I have another one here. I have two colors. And I'll pass this around too. And if and this is one of the things. This one isn't open, so feel free to open it. There you go. This is a chocolate mint cigar. This is sold cheaper because it's a cigar, but you can see it's the same size as a cigarette, and it smells just wonderful. And I always tell people, I've never seen a grown man smoke a chocolate cigar, but the 16-year-old girls like them. So this is what we're going to be out doing as part of our program with the OTPs, and particularly like these hookah pens. This is a big thing for me because our kids are smoking them, and you wouldn't know it, and the teachers don't know it. So that's what we're doing, and if you have any questions, and if you want any of our posters to put up, how about if I put them here on this blank spot at the table, and please come over and take them and put them in your office. Church, organization, wherever. Thank you.
Joyce, is the coalition doing anything with the electronic cigarettes, the e-cigarettes?
The e-cigarettes, right now we're not allowed to.
Okay.
Because the FDA hasn't made, FDA hasn't made a decision enough, though they do contain nicotine, so kids under 18 cannot buy them, but that's our next step. And unfortunately, like here in Kenosha, we now have an e-cigarette cafe, and that
really?
Says to me, why? Why would you go through that?
So do you smoke
this?
I mean, how do you?
You smoke it. You pull that little tab there. Well,
the plastic tab.
That little one that's hanging out there looks like what you have by a battery,
yep.
And then you push, and then you smoke it, and you won't. Nobody knows you're smoking it.
Other than the
looks like you're chewing on a pen.
Sure. And the kids are sitting in the classrooms doing it. And if the parents see it, they have no idea. You can buy this stuff right over the internet. That's where I bought it. I just cannot, with my name, be caught going into a store buying them. So that's what I did. I went over the internet. So that's how easy.
Hookah?
Yeah, they're hookah pens. So for everything we do, the tobacco companies are smarter than we are. To come up with something more.
I think we need to have some ethics classes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're hoping to do the presentation. If you have any need at any time you want us to come in, we'll come in and do the presentation. And it's always an eye opener. Thank you.
Thank you,
Joyce.
Great.
I've never heard of these.
All right. Last year, as part of the grant, we did a mini show, which is the Survey of the Health of Wisconsin. UW sent some folks down here to actively go out in the community. We had 285 people in the community that participated in the mini show. Folks went into their homes and actually did BMIs and went through some survey kind of information for the process. A snapshot of what we found out when they gave us our data back, I think that was in end of October maybe, Joyce, when they brought us our data.
Yes.
69% of the participants were overweight or obese. There is a correlation with the participants between their level of income and education and their weight. Men were more likely to be overweight than women. The 35 to 54 age group had the highest percentage of obesity, and 40% of white participants and 61% of others were obese. Part of the survey questions that went along with it, the majority of the participants did not consume the recommended number of vegetables or fruits. 27% of the participants ate fast food at least once per week. 75% reported that they were exercising. The metabolic equivalent units, people were reporting that they were getting exercise, but they were still obese. 60% of the participants had smoked at some point in their lifetime, and 21.5% were current smokers, which actually I think correlates pretty well with our county numbers. So it was a really good representation because it seemed like the metrics were right on. Our mental health scores were in the low average range, and people that showed signs of depression, anxiety, and higher levels of stress were more likely to have lower incomes, less than $20,000 per year. In addition to the mini show, there was also a public opinion poll that was conducted. It was conducted statewide, but they also made sure that they hit each of the 7 counties that has a transformation grant so that they could get the opinions of the folks that live in our counties. And according to that public opinion poll, 66% of persons were concerned about tobacco use by youth. 72% of the respondents supported investing in tobacco prevention and cessation. 89% see childhood obesity as a serious problem. Voters believe that schools and local health departments should play a role in reducing and preventing childhood obesity. 87% of people supported safe routes for walking or biking to school. 85% favored at least 60 minutes of physical activity per day at school. And 82% of respondents would require schools to buy and serve local produce. That was our year.
Thank you. Any questions, comments?
What exactly entails like active recess and active classrooms?
Active recess, a facilitator on the playground will actually engage children in an activity. So they would like play a game or do an activity, but it would be coordinated by a facilitator. So instead of just opening the door and having the kids go out, they would actually coordinate the activity. Active classrooms, sometimes that's referred to as brain breaks. And they're designed as like little 2 or 3 minute sessions. It can be as simple as the teacher having all the students stand up and do some stretches. Okay. So you finish your reading section, everybody stand up, let's stretch. They stretch out for a couple minutes, then they sit down and move on to bed. It's supposed to help the kids just focus better as they move to the next topic.
Thank you.
So, what's the next step after this grade
survey? The next step after what?
What are we going to do with this information?
Well, in a perfect world, it will influence our local policymakers that we should have policies that are more open to healthy lifestyles. We're going to continue working with the schools. We're working with KUSD. We're looking at potentially going west of the I and trying to develop some relationships in the western part of the county as well.
Thank you, Pat. Any other questions?
I'll just kind of get in here for late. The fresh vegetables is difficult. I'm on the board of the Shalom Center. And at the food pantry, we've had a donor now for well over a year, partly produce. And they're bringing in the potatoes and fruits and vegetables. And we've had a lot of people have community gardens that have donated pounds and pounds of food. And the shoppers will buy that. They can just, you know, get into the box, good, canned good, quick, convenient type of stuff. It's really, our staff is really trying to educate them too. You have to take some of this, you've got to take some of this.
And a lot of that, I know our WIC program, they're working with families and trying to show them how to prepare foods because a lot of families don't actually know how to cook whole foods. They,
that's
not,
true, too. A lot of them say, I wouldn't know what to do with it.
Right.
Right.
They're so used to buying things that are processed in a can or in a box that they really don't know what to do with fresh fruits and vegetables. And we see that a lot. Well, the Harbor Market, I think we've donated food from the gardens as well. And yeah, some people just don't have a clue what to do with fresh fruits and vegetables. So
yeah, it's an education process.
It really is.
I'm just a little bit curious. I work with the Covered Bound program at Trinity. If you have extra produce that you would have to get rid of, is that something we can funnel through to seniors?
Yes.
Because they, I think, would know how to use extra
produce. Yes. You could contact Barb Montegrummer at the pantry on your computer.
I just have one other question. As far as the gardens that you were referring to, and you said they were at schools, are those also the gardens that they have at libraries in the city?
Those aren't
part of this whole okay.
No, this one, we're putting it, and most of the elementary gardens are about four by eight raised beds, and it's a coordination of like planting the vegetables and then doing the Got Dirt, Got Veggies curriculum along with that and teaching kids about fruits and vegetables so that they won't be afraid to try them, and then hopefully if they go home and say, Mom, I had a carrot today and it was really awesome, that maybe Mom will buy a carrot.
Thank you. Any other comments? Cindy?
Thank you. Glenn helped me pass out some more of our plaques. These are to thank those of you that helped us achieve public health accreditation. So we thank you for your support. And we just wanted to have a small token of our appreciation and recognize you as supporting the health department. So thank you very much. I wanted to just inform the board that on Saturday, Dr. Lux emailed me and she has resigned from the board due to time constraints with the expansion of her practice. She said that she can no longer serve. Really appreciated your time, and we'll put together a letter of thank you and of course a plaque, because it's been quite a while that she's been on here. We'll find out how many years so that we can recognize those years that she has served and given up her time. The environmental department, just wanted to share with you that Chapter 16, we have proposed changes that are moving through the administrative review. It has gone to our Human Services Committee, and the committee has approved those changes, and will go to Finance and then to the full County Board. And the proposed changes for Chapter 16, which are the food code, it determines establishments' risk categories. These risk categories are part of the health space, the data system that we've implemented over a year ago, and the license fees are based on the three risk categories, simple, moderate, and high. Also, it allows, currently the ordinance allows for a 2.5% increase, and we'll be moving to a proposal of not to exceed 5% increase per year. The restaurant temporary fee schedule will also increase, and we're getting closer to recovering direct costs from 80% to 95% in 2014. The retail food store fee schedule will increase the revenue from 55 to 68% in 2014. These will all go into effect July 1, 2014, based on approval. And lastly, our reinspection policy. We had charged a fee of $50 for a second reinspection, and that'll be moved to a first reinspection. The environmental health team does have one environmental public health tech position that still remains open. Our lab, interim forensic chemist, continues to do well and is moving forward with all of the mentoring from Carleton that should be complete about the end of March. I want to recognize our nursing program through the leadership of Gwen Perry Bride, that we have been we will be published, I should say, we will be published on PHQIX, which stands for Public Health Improvement, Quality Improvement Exchange System. And you received a copy, you left a copy at the front there, that there was an objective for the Healthiest Wisconsin 2020, and it's on improving birth outcomes. And Gwen and her team, and the team consists of several people from the state, Patrice Onemeyer, Georgia Cameron, which is our Southeastern Regional Director, Kate Gillespie, Millie Jones, Dr. Murray Ketcher, Terry Cruz, Susan Kratz, Angela Rohan, Sandy Coleman. But our internal staff, Gwen, myself, Diane Bozovich, Allison Atke, Joan Facetti, and Karen Kirsting was our reporter for all of our meetings that we held. And so it's quite a, it was quite a lengthy process. Our team did an excellent job on this project, which was to expand and enhance prenatal care coordination and reproductive health services, of which they achieved positive results. And Gwen can explain further if there's any questions regarding that. Also, our W3P, which is our Well Woman Wisconsin funding, our Well Woman Wisconsin program, the funding, they're reconsidering, instead of total elimination for public health, looking at a regional aspect. So it's something that Kenosha County would entertain to apply for our coordinator to be a regional coordinator to continue some level of funding, but of course the responsibilities would change drastically. Let's see, Pat, is this correct that for Transform Wisconsin, continuation of funding was promising? That you mentioned that, or okay, so it would be for how many years? Are they another cycle or another 3, or is it 5?
The full
5 years?
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's for the full 5 years, but they, the state had the grant for a year, so that would give us 4 years of funding.
Okay, good. And they really recognized those health departments that were already in the system have been making real positive gains, achievements, and they wanted to continue to have those outcomes for the state. The Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program, the Suicide Prevention Initiative, is going to have a clergy summit February 27th. And Gwen and her team is putting together, ready to release the Healthy, the Kenosha Healthy Smiles grant that'll be submitted this Friday on the 14th. That's all I have.
Any questions for Cindy? Thank you. Corporate counsel report?
I have nothing to report.
Other business as allowed by law? Any board comments?
I'd like to just take this opportunity. I'm a board member of the Shalom Center, our local food pantry, soup kitchen, emergency family shelter, and a means program. We read in some of these papers, we are purchasing. Longtime Kenosha was known as the Tyson Sporting Goods building. It was most recently used as St. Vincent de Paul, and today was about 2 years ago. With the idea that we move out of our current building, which is horrendous to operate, not handicapped accessible at all, and we also have an agreement with the city to vacate that property. We've got about 3 years left on that agreement, so we are going to purchase that. So essentially, we are moving 4 blocks to the east. We're at 62nd and 17th. We'll be at 62nd and 14th. Immediately, when I was in the paper yesterday, a local radio DJ lashed out with a Facebook attack right away on his Facebook page, saying if you build it, they will come, that we're sticking it to the neighborhood, and we're building it by a school. But we're already by a school. We're already in the neighborhood. And if we build it, they will not come because they're here already. But today he used his radio show to take quite a few shots at us, and I think he'll keep it up even though he knows the truth. But I'll just speak to what we're attempting to do is the INS program, which is a program that is 7 nights a week, 365 days a year, at churches, 4 different churches, 7 nights a week. In the winter time, it starts at 7 o'clock. They have to be intake by 10 o'clock. They hold as many as 30 people. It's up by city code, 26, 28, 30, by city fire code is what they do. None of them are handicapped accessible. They're all sleeping on mats on concrete floors. And we average probably, and it's full, it's been full every night. So we're looking to locate that INS program all in one building. And that will be the building that we're purchasing. The reason for doing that is our clients leave at 7 o'clock in the morning. We don't know where they go. In the wintertime, in this severe weather, we know where they go because we do have limited transportation to bring them to safe shelter. But if we have a permanent place where they can stay, it eliminates all these different churches every night them traveling around town. We also pay those churches. Only one of those churches has a shower facility, and none of them have laundry facilities. So one night a week, they can take a shower and wherever they go to wash their clothes. And so it'll be at one specific site. We will still depend on all the volunteers from the churches to assist us. So that's our goal. Eventually, we'll move the soup kitchen out of the current building and over there. That's year two plan. The building is going to need some remodeling and some updating, but it really works for us. We've got an architect that's donated his time, and it's all kind of mapped out. The alderman is on board with this, the city mayor is on board with this, and the county executive is on board. So all the elected officials have been notified. We've covered our bases. It'll need to be rezoned from B1 to IP, institutional park. They have no problem doing that, and they have no problem giving us a conditional use permit. I'll just give you a snapshot. The emergency family shelter is on the second floor of the building, and it's 8 rooms right now. It's 8 rooms. It houses 8 families. Now, these are 8 rooms. They're just bedrooms. There's one common area, one small kitchen, and one bathroom that these 8 families share. And here's who was in it in the month of, this is November, because I forgot to didn't print out December. The family shelter served 11 families, consisting of two-parent families and 9 single mothers with children. We had 4 families move out of the shelter in the month of November. Nobody, I'll tell you, nobody wants to stay in those shelters. It's their goal to get out. The rumor that, you know, if you build it, they will come, that's not true. 2 mothers who found employment while in the shelter were able to save enough money and move into their own apartments. 1 young 19-year-old mother who found employment was able to move in with the homeless youth program, and another one found a shelter on their own. And now I'll just talk a little bit about the INS program and what the intake is for that. The INS admitted 55 new guests consisting of 42 singles and 5 families containing 5 adults and 8 children. And that's another thing that people don't see. They see these single homeless guys walking around the parks. They don't see the family part of it. 16 individuals were turned away, and here's why they're turned away. 10 who were on a 6-month waiting period. 3 for capacity reasons were full. 2 were banned, and you can be banned from our sites for bad behavior or not complying with our program. And 1 was under the influence. 4 individuals obtained employment while in that program. I did the check-in the other night at Emmanuel Church on 54th and Sheridan. 8 of the guys that were in that program all had jobs. 2 of them drove cars, the rest were on bikes or used public transportation. They all used wake-up calls to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get a job. But the story of the community is underemployment. They're not employed enough. That's wages in there. The above included 9 persons suffering from some form of mental illness, 4 individuals with alcohol and other drug addictions, 14 persons suffering from some form of physical or developmental impairment, and 4 victims of domestic violence, and 4 were veterans. And that's another thing that people don't see. Nationwide, they believe the homeless population is anywhere between 25% to 30% veterans. And that certainly shows in Kenosha County that. And we have 4 that were in there for domestic violence. That doesn't mean that women's and children's arisals were full. Some parents, women with children, do not like the fact that their children have to be put into counseling at women's and children's arisals. They don't like the rules, so they come to us. But it could be that they're also full. So I want to talk about a look at some of the rules, because if you build it, they will come, is not true. First of all, everybody's got active case management in any of these programs except for the soup kitchen program. They all have to provide picture ID. A criminal background check is done on everybody. Certainly, there's no child molesters in our program, and there's nobody with any violent behavior in the program. And here's the eligibility. Kenosha County residents are eligible for 30 days in the shelter services, and non-residents are eligible to stay for 7 days. So Kenosha County residents get there first. If we're full with Kenosha County residents, we turn away out-of-state residents. If there's room enough at the shelter, certainly out-of-state residents, out-of-county residents to stay there. But they can stay 7 days, and all the rest can stay 30 days. So that's that building become is not true. Individuals who have exited the program within the last 6 months, you know, they can stay there 30 days in the IMS program. They can't come back for 6 months after that. Individuals who have been banned, you can be banned for not following our programs, not doing what they're told to do, not going to job training in the morning, not going to all the rest of the programs we have, life skills classes that we have. And any individual under the influence or suspected under the influence of alcohol or any drugs is never allowed into the program. And that's where First Step comes in. First Step does allow those people to there. And there's no doubt in my mind they're saving lives that they're staying there instead of being on this call. Individuals who present with any uncontrollable mental illness, severe physical handicap, or a known communicable disease. So the rumors that he's putting forth in the community, and a lot of people are believing it, I've had a lot of comments already, are just not true. So this is a public health issue. These people, homeless people, use emergency room services at least 3 times more than a normal person would. So it is a huge cost to the community if you're not housing them. So I just wanted to update everybody here. Anytime I have a captive audience, I'm trying to educate people. So, thank you. If you have any questions, I can answer them.
Sorry. For the veterans that you have that come in, do you work at all with the VAs?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because I know, like, I work
county health. There's a county guy here for Veterans Administration. But a lot of them don't want to be. You know, we point every client in the right direction. They come to the building quite a bit. Jobs, health, the veterans, everything. There's a portion of this population that just, they don't see themselves as being mentally ill. Some people say, I'm not homeless, I want to look like this.
Yeah, because I work at the VA in North Chicago, and we feel like our homeless veterans' benefits are really underutilized. So
probably so, and for homeless, right.
But for some of the same reasons, they are choosing to be or whatever, but I just want to make sure.
Absolutely. We link everybody to every service in the community, whether it's mental health, medical, or human service, public service, anything you can.
Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Second.